Okay, the next talk is by Lee Dyer, who, that's me, from the University of Nevada at Reno. And I added an author in here, Deborah Letourneau from UC Santa Cruz, because she contributed quite a bit to this after I submitted my title. And unfortunately, I see her in the audience. I actually submitted my title right when I was thinking about this concept of a diversity cascade and thinking of writing an ideas paper for Ecology Letters, where we would be able to provide a definition, a formal definition of a diversity cascade. In an ideas paper that Deborah Letourneau and I have written, we've defined it as an indirect effect that is a cause or a consequence of a change of diversity at one trophic level on another trophic level. And this term has been used in about half a dozen papers, including some work I did with Deborah Letourneau on this system, which is a phenomenal system. Some people have heard a little bit about the system. I'm not going to go into everything about it, but it's a myrmecophyte. It's an ant plant, Piperacina clatum, that has over 50 species of arthropods that live inside of the plant. I'll just point out a few. There are these ants that protect the plant from various caterpillars, both specialists and generalists, such as these geometrids, Eos apereria. There's a beetle that kills these ants, specializes on these ants. It kills these ants, which releases these herbivores, and you get pretty good damage when this beetle is present. Deborah and I have done a series of experiments, anywhere from 6 months experiments to 3 year experiments, where we've added beetles to these plants, and it's actually kind of a complex web. There are a lot of members of the third trophic level, but really what happens when you add beetles is they have a big effect on ant populations, and the specialist caterpillars, most notably, are the aspect of the second trophic level that's affected by this, so their populations explode, and you get an effect on the plants where you get lower plant biomass and an effect on their ability to reproduce asexually. So plants that have really high levels of herbivore damage are less likely to produce via adventitious shoots or fragmentation. So this we thought of this as a classic trophic cascade, in that it was going along with Harrison Smith and Slobodkin's idea that herbivores are regulated by their natural enemy, and the world is green because of natural enemies keeping herbivore populations down. The focus of the classic trophic cascade, though, is on density of organisms at each trophic level, or on really the bottom line is primary productivity affected. And here we're looking at one species in the understory of a rainforest. So primary productivity of the whole rainforest wasn't affected, as far as we know, by adding these beetles. But there are other variables you can look at as well, and that's sort of the topic of this talk is on diversity cascades. And when you do look at the effect of this manipulation on diversity in the understory, you find that adding beetles actually does affect seedling diversity. So we did these experiments in these 2-meter by 4-meter plots and found that in rich soils where there were more generalist herbivores, our predator additions are this hatch bar here, diversity of overall plant diversity, and this was via herbivorion seedlings, was much lower than when we didn't add the beetles. Whereas on poor soils where specialist herbivores dominated, adding the beetles allowed the specialist herbivores to knock back Piper and more seedlings could come in. But in both cases, there was a diversity cascade. Adding a top predator affected the ants, which affected herbivores, which affected plant diversity in the understory. And to me, this was a more interesting variable than primary productivity. I'm not, trying to rank these as being a better response variable, but it was very interesting and surprising that this tiny little beetle could affect diversity in the understory. And so this leads to this definition and the concept of the diversity cascade, an indirect effect that causes or is a consequence of a change in diversity on a non-adjacent trophic level. And, didn't mean to do that. And here's the general concept that if you have a perturbation such as adding a beetle, that can change predator abundance, which in the case of the Piper system it did, herbivore abundance, and then eventually that can have an effect on plant diversity. That's one of many different types of diversity cascades. So if you look at this further, this is sort of a specialized system But actually, there's a couple thousand species of piper, and a lot more of them may be myrmecophytes than we previously imagined. There could be hundreds of them that are myrmecophytes. And as we look in Ecuador, as we look at more pipers, we're finding that across the piper phylogeny, we're finding individuals that have evolved really tight associations with ants. So we actually decided to look at other pipers and look in understories of different rainforests to see if Herbivorion piper could predict diversity of plants in the understory. And we did find this. So this is where we've measured Herbivorion piper, and that's what you see on the x-axis here. And here you see diversity of seedlings in the understory. But we found the opposite pattern in another forest. So as generalist herbivory increases, the number of seedling species goes up. And this was supported by experimental work where when we removed generalist herbivores, diversity went down. So this is the opposite effect. And what's going on here is that instead of having a forest that's dominated by seedlings that generalists are attacking evenly, we did this in a forest. And I know there's a lot of path analyses here, but what I want to focus on is this family here, the Ananaceae. There are a lot of Ananaceae seedlings in the understory, and these were disproportionately attacked by the generalist herbivores, allowing for an increase in richness. So what's interesting here is that the diversity cascade is context dependent, and you really need to know the natural history of the system before you can predict which direction a top-down cascade like that will go. And another example of this is in an agricultural system, and this is a huge mess, this path diagram here, but it's from a publication by Pearson et al. And I want to really focus on the yellow boxes here, where previously in alfalfa, John Starman and I had shown that an increase in predator species richness caused an increase in alfalfa biomass by decreasing herbivore abundance. But in another study by Pearson et al., they found that increasing predator species richness was really affecting specialist herbivores that caused an increase in saponin content of the alfalfa. So you still get this diversity cascade, but it's a different effect because you have specialist herbivores instead of generalist herbivores. Right, so I think the goal then is to try to come up with the generalities, perhaps focusing on diet breadth of consumers to try to figure out which direction diversity cascades will go. And I think we will, as we look more at the literature, we'll find that the applications of understanding diversity cascades are pretty broad. So on Wednesday, John Carlson, a former student at Tulane University, will talk about a diversity cascade that affects transmission of malaria. And in fact, this is there's a whole literature on negative human health consequences resulting from biodiversity loss reviewed by Kiesing et al. And if you look carefully at this literature, you'll find that a lot of these effects are indirect effects of changes in biodiversity. Similarly, like the work in alfalfa, it's well known that changes in diversity at the third trophic level have either negative or sometimes even positive indirect effects on crop production. And of course, this, I think, is a very important conservation issue. Extinctions or additions in terms of invasive species can cascade through trophic levels and impact ecosystem function or other metrics used by conservation biologists. When Deborah and I went through the literature and looked at some of the classic trophic cascade studies and just classic studies of trophic interactions, here's just a partial list of some of the studies that have actually demonstrated diversity cascades. And these go from simple aquatic systems to very complex terrestrial systems, applied systems, systems that, like in our Piperacina clatum example, relatively undisturbed rainforest. So I think it's pretty clear that diversity cascades are very pervasive. And if we start to, instead of, right now there's a paradigm developing that trophic cascades, the indirect effect of enemies on productivity, are not important in more complex terrestrial systems or more diverse systems. And I think rather than doing away with the concept of the trophic cascade, focusing on other metrics, either looking at trait-mediated indirect effects or looking at a parameter like diversity and examining diversity cascades will yield some very interesting results. And in fact, when Deborah and I reanalyzed our original study of adding predatory beetles to Piperacina clatum, we realized that when we were focusing just on abundance of the ants, we were missing another important factor. What really happened is there was also a change in ant diversity that was part of our overall effect ultimately on plant diversity. And I think that that's the way to go with diversity cascades research, is to also relook at some of the trophic cascades literature that's out there. And I would like to thank a number of people for generating data that helped both Deborah and I to formulate ideas about the diversity cascade concept. And I think I have about a minute and a half for questions, so thank you.